Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. This week we're talking about Trump, tariffs, the G7 summit, EU reform, gender politics in Indonesia, and Emperor Constantine's finger. I hope you enjoy. Thank you very much for listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms. This afternoon's program, of course, just to advise folks as they join us this afternoon here on the talk station, FM 107 AM 1240, is that every Wednesday afternoon when we're chatting with our foreign editor, Tom Arms, he is in London, so there's a good 5-hour difference in time. So as we are preparing to go live with this program or go on air with this program, he is probably resting in bed. So we do accommodate his sleeping schedule. For whatever reason, we haven't figured that one out, but we always do appreciate his time with us here on the program. And so Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And Tom, good afternoon, or actually as we're airing this, good evening. Question, how's the weather there in your fair town of London?
As usual, perfect.
Oh, I like that, perfect.
It's absolutely gorgeous. Mind you, earlier in the week, it was a little bit chilly. But, it's one of these, London's one of those places, when the sun comes out, it's absolutely gorgeous. When the sun goes behind the clouds, it gets a bit chilly.
What about the humidity? How damp is it there in London?
When the sun comes out, it's beautiful usually because, you know, the sun burns the humidity off. It never really gets that hot, usually, and humid. Not like the East Coast of America, where it's hot and humid. Mm-hmm. Here, I would say today the temperature is in about 80 degrees. Nice little breeze. I go for a cycle ride every morning down along the river past the Houses of Parliament. It's beautiful.
By the way, bicycling is a consistent form of transportation there, is it not?
It is becoming so.
Okay.
More and more people are cycling. It's becoming more and more popular. They have cycle lanes and cycle routes and things like that.
Wonderful. Well, we're catching up with that here in the States as well. All right, Tom, speaking of here in the States, let's talk about the news coverage of events here recently in the States. And of course, obviously, we've got to talk about President Trump. And the question, of course, goes to what are the headlines there in the United Kingdom and the European community?
Well, there are several headlines. One is the fact that Trump now says he can pardon himself, which I think has made big news over here, because the idea is, well, if he can pardon himself, then the law doesn't really apply to him, does it?
Well,
The other one, of course, is Manafort witness tampering, the Philadelphia Eagles story, and, of course, the U.S. ambassador to Germany, his comments. The new ambassador, Richard Grenell, has not gone over well with the Germans.
And share with us why.
Well, you know, he arrives in Germany, and he says, I'm here to help the right wing take off in Europe and Germany. Okay, well, that doesn't go over very well. This is an interview he had with Breitbart News. As Martin Schulz, who's the former Social Democrat leader, said, it's as if a German ambassador turned up in Washington and said, I'm here to strengthen the Democratic Party.
Well,
when it's, know, and that's not what the diplomat is supposed to do. The diplomat is supposed to listen to what the host government has to tell him about their policies and explain his country's policies to them, and to do the same with other parties and to keep his own government informed in case one of the other parties does come to power, but not to help them come to power.
The question,
there's a big difference.
Question, what has been the reaction of the German government on this?
They've been furious, absolutely furious. Angela Merkel is a very diplomatic character. She simply shrugged her shoulders, sort of. Other people are calling for his dismissal, for his recall. That's
what I recall seeing some stories about, asking for his recall.
It's not the first time. He's had some problems with others. I mean, there was the chap, what was his name, Pete Hoekstra, mm-hmm. who was appointed to the Netherlands. And he didn't go over very well because he was going on about how the Netherlands is filled with no-go areas
right.
and Muslims are burning politicians.
Well, no, I don't know about the burning politicians, but the no-go story, of course, has resurrected itself here in the States, and also explanations of similar experiences in other countries, I might add.
It depends on what your definition of a no-go area okay. is. I mean, there are no-go areas in America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are parts of America which I would not feel comfortable walking through at 1 o'clock in the morning. But does that mean that the police don't go there? They have to go there. Does that mean the fire brigade doesn't go there? No, they have to go there.
Well,
you know, there are always going to be places in every country where it's going to be dangerous to go late at night.
Or other times of the day. Let's not belabor that issue. I want to talk about a few other items here. I want to go back to two other items that you mentioned a few moments ago, the pardon and the Philadelphia Eagles. And question related to the pardon. Well, how is that? You made a passing comment, but what's the coverage on that? The fact that the president...
Oh, it's quite a bit of coverage on that.
Okay.
Quite a bit of coverage on all these stories. Again, the idea is, what's the point of having a law if it's not applied to a person who can then do whatever he wants?
So they take these comments very seriously, I gather.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Well, mainly because, no, they take them seriously because President Trump said, I can pardon myself.
As a matter of fact, there's a somewhat of a debate about this, I might add, here in the States. All right, moving on. The other aspect and comment you made a moment ago, the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm intrigued that would be of any interest to the European community in light of the fact that, I know there's a growing interest in football. We'll get to that in a moment. But That was something of note and among them.
No, I think it wasn't because of a growing interest in football. I think it was more a growing interest in the principle behind why they were disinvited or decided not to go to, depends on whose mm-hmm. side you take,
right.
To the White House. And also that President Trump decided to make political capital out of it. That's how it's viewed here.
Right.
By having his own ceremony without the Eagles.
Right. By the way,
they think he acted a bit silly.
I'm questioning the issue of football, and of course, Philadelphia Eagles, and they've played there in the United Kingdom. Is there a growing interest in that whole sports venue, if you will?
Oh, absolutely. My son, who was raised in this country, mm-hmm. is an absolutely avid American football fan. Follows the Super Bowl, follows the draft. He stays up late for the draft. He
wow.
stays up late for the Super Bowl. He's a fantasy football player. He loves American football. It's a growing group of people here. We have four football games, NFL football games a year in London now.
So this fact that it was the Philadelphia Eagles caught your attention. I'm going to take a quick break. I want to come back to the issue of the role of sports and politics, and if there's a conflict or if there's a confluence of that in the European community, as we are seeing here in the States. Get your answer to that in just a moment. You're listening, of course, to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Joining us this afternoon here on Viewpoints Around the World, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And Tom, as we were going to the break a few moments ago, brought up the topic of the Philadelphia Eagles and the disinvitation of the Eagles to the White House to recognize them for their Super Bowl victory. Is there a distinct delineation between sports and politics? We've been seeing it here in the States with the kneeling on the football field during the playing of the national anthem and other such events. There seems to be a closer affinity between sports and politics. How about in the European community?
I don't think it's as close as it is in the States at the moment. There are obviously times when it does become quite close. There's a case at the moment where a footballer, that is a soccer player, quite a famous soccer player, has tattooed a gun on his right shin, or not shin, on his right calf. Now, this is seen as very controversial because guns are banned here. And so they think what he did was to basically say that, you know, I'm in favor of gun control. And a lot of people have called for him to remove that tattoo from his leg. Now, what he said is that he's very much in favor of gun control because his father was killed by a gun, was murdered when he was only 2 years old. He always swore he'd never pick up a gun. And the only reason he tattooed a gun on his right foot is because that is the foot or the leg with which he shoots the ball into the goal.
But still,
people, it's a big story here. It's been on the front page for, at least a week.
Related to the championship teams, do they get invited to meet with political officials, maybe even the Queen?
Yes, they will meet. They'll be invited to 10 Downing Street. For the same reason that they're invited to the White House, it's political. Uh-huh. The Prime Minister wants to be seen to be rubbing shoulders with winners.
Okay, photo op, a great photo op.
Yeah.
All right, so even setting aside the interest and support for football, you're telling me that this whole narrative related to the Eagles being invited to the White House and then being disinvited has a certain parallel. Not that they've been disinvited to 10 Downing Street or any of the other major political centers in Europe, but this is something that the rest of the world understands.
Yeah, people can relate to it.
That's interesting. Let's move on to a few items that we are going to get into longer conversation about. Let's talk about the G7 summit, also tariffs. And an interesting story today that you're not probably aware of since you're some 5 hours ahead of us. We're now getting stories about the fact that we've had the largest, and this is in the States, the largest trade deficit with China over the past 4 years in 4 months. But let's talk about the G7 and the fact of tariffs. And the president is going to be meeting with world leaders this weekend. What's the expectation? What are you reading in the papers there in the European community?
He's going to get an earful.
That's what I've heard too. Yeah.
He's going to get a really, really big earful in both ears. They really cannot understand it. They think it's a huge step back, that the future is free trade and globalism, especially between allies who have a shared history, shared culture, shared values, and that he is taking a major, major step back, which will have an impact not only on the American economy, but also on the world economy.
That being said, what will be the outcome? Is this just a matter of, shall we say, pressure on the president?
Reciprocity. I don't think, from what I've been reading, you're closer to it than I am because you're on the other side of the Atlantic. I don't think Trump will change his mind. He's not in the habit of changing his mind. And if that's the case, there's going to be a trade war. There will be tariffs put on things like Harley Davidson and cosmetics and things like that. I think they're talking to the tune of about $50 billion worth of goods. And if that is the case, then people or the Trump administration will think, well, we'll put more tariffs on European goods. Mm-hmm. And then the Europeans will turn around and put more tariffs on American goods. And you've got a trade war.
What about the role of China in this? Because I just mentioned a moment ago the fact that in the U.S. the trade deficit
is China, which is escaping tariffs at the moment and is supposed to be the reason for the tariff. You know, I cannot understand, Lockwood, why they're complaining about all these steel imports from China when, in fact, China's like 15th on the list of exporters of steel to the US. It's well down the list. Mexico, Canada, and the EU are much, much bigger exporters of steel products than China is.
And therein lies the issue of the topic of tariffs. And of course, those are the items that are being taxed by the president, aluminum and steel, particularly from China, from Mexico and Canada. But the other question for you on this
But he started off by saying it was China that was the problem.
China.
That it was oversupply of steel from China being dumped on the American markets. But it's not the Chinese steel that's being affected. It's everyone else.
The other question for you, and this has to go with, you know, what will be the political fallout from the G7? Setting aside the issue of a trade war, will there be anything else? Is the European community looking for any other changes or outcomes from the G7, particularly in the area of the Middle East and Iran? Is there any discussion there?
Well, I don't think we'll have any solutions related to the Middle East. I think that the Europeans are putting a lot of pressure on Trump to reverse his policy of dropping out of the Iran nuclear accord. This past week, the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu has been touring Russia, France, Germany, and Britain to try and persuade them to, in fact, drop out of the Iran nuclear accord as well. They are giving him short shrift. They're saying there's no way we're going to pull out. At the same time, Iran has said that they are resuming their nuclear enrichment program.
Is there a fear that this whole Iranian peace accord, or shall we say accord, I don't want to call it a peace accord, is now pretty much in jeopardy, or is there a feeling that there may be an opportunity to restructure it?
No, it's very much in jeopardy. Very, very much in jeopardy.
Is there a sense then in the European community that there may be no way to bring Iran back into the world market?
It's not a question of bringing them back in the world market. They're talking about having their separate deal with Iran, which would mean that they would be in the world market. But of course, that means that would damage their relations with the U.S. They're trying to structure something along those lines. But would that actually keep Iran out of the nuclear club? That's the question.
We'll get back to some more items here in just a moment with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. This is Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. Too much of a good thing is bad. That's what my mother always told me. Her pronouncement was echoed by my father, teacher, doctor, and so forth. That appears to be the case for environmentally friendly green technology. I mean, how can you go wrong with windmills, solar panels, tidal power, and pedal power? They're the good, politically correct thing. Well, according to a report recently published by Cambridge University, green technology could cost the world economy up to $4 trillion by 2035. This is, of course, grist for the mill of the climate change denial lobby, until you examine the fine print. The cost is the poorly planned transition from non-renewable to renewable energy. The reasons for the potential problem are manifold. It is costing more and more to extract fossil fuels from the earth. The additional extraction cost requires time and heavy investment. Green energy technology also requires investment and time before it can come fully on stream. And the transition between the switchover from fossil fuel to environmentally friendly energy production will be very expensive. The countries that will hurt the hardest will be the ones who are currently benefiting the most from recently increased fossil fuel production: the US, Russia, and Canada. Canada and the US especially are now heavily into shale oil production. The U.S. invested $22 billion from private equity sources alone in the U.S. shale oil business in the first 3 months of 2018. Oil production is this year set to reach a record high of 9.7 million barrels a day. American investment in green energy was about half of the money put into fossil fuel. According to the International Energy Agency, the world invested around $700 billion in oil, gas, and coal in 2016. China is leading the way in investment in renewable energy. It is still building coal-fired power stations, but in 2017, according to Bloomberg, it poured $132.6 billion into green energy resources. This was more than twice the investment of the US and EU combined, and half the world total invested in renewable energy. At the moment, relatively high oil prices make fossil fuel look like an attractive place to put your money. When North American shale oil started coming on stream a few years ago, OPEC responded by boosting production, which saw prices drop to an average of $40.68 a barrel. Since then, the cartel has teamed up with Russia to cut production, which has pushed the price back up to $65.63 a barrel. Higher world oil prices have increased the profits for the relatively expensive fracking business in America. The result, says Cambridge University, is that the world is heading for a carbon bubble, which could do more damage to the world economy than the 2008 banking crisis. According to another report, up to 20% of the world's power plant capacity could become stranded assets as the world economy shifts from non-renewable to renewable energy resources. The Cambridge report adds that further damage could be done to the world economy by the rapid sell-off of oil and gas reserves by producing countries eager to dump those industries before they become worthless. All this depends, of course, on the implementation of the Paris Climate Change Accord. The authors of the Cambridge report say that if it is implemented as currently stands, the cost to the world economy will be a mere $1 trillion. But if proposed new policies are set, the price will rise to the $4 trillion mark. The good news is that not all countries will suffer. Some will do well. China's heavy investment in green technology is expected to pay it major dividends. The EU is also expected to enjoy a relatively easy ride. But, said Professor Jorge Vinales, the report's co-author, it is potentially catastrophic for the high-cost producers of fossil fuel. The solution? Well, according to Professor Vinales, it is simple. Cut investment in fossil fuel production and increase investment in renewables. But to do that would mean abandoning the short-term profits to be made now.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. This portion of the program has been pre-recorded. Tom, the concern I want to bring up about the nuclear club, and I want to move on to other items, but I do want to touch on the issue of North Korea. And of course, there's been some concern there. The anticipated summit with President Kim Jong-un, and of course, I don't know if this has been received much coverage there in the European community, but Dennis Rodman may in fact be joining the summit. What has been the coverage of the summit there in the European community?
It's been fairly low-key this week. They're waiting for something of substance to come out of it. And of course, that won't happen until the summit itself. So a lot of the coverage is, you know, this is where it's going to be. It's going to be on this and this island. It's going to be in this hotel. Right. President Trump is going to stay here. Kim Jong-un is going to stay there. So it's details like that that are being discussed at the moment, rather than anything of substance. The only thing of substance, I would say, being discussed is the indication that Trump is saying that we may not get anything big out of his summit. It's more of a get-to-know-you type of meeting.
And what's the feeling about that?
Well, I think the feeling here is that most of your get-to-know-you meetings should be at a lower level between the Secretary of State and the Foreign Minister, that when you meet at the very, very top level, that should be because you want to agree something in substance.
Okay. Well, the other aspect, and of course, we're going to get into another event taking place. We've got the G7. We've got the summit next week, anticipated summit in Singapore. And of course, we've got the Bilderberg conference, which is going to be taking place this weekend as well. I'm just wondering, is there any willingness, a desire to give President Trump credit for really making some major changes worldwide, and including, if you will, the tariff issue as well?
Well, certainly no credit on the tariff issue.
Okay.
a lot of anger there. I think it might be willingness to give credit on North Korea. But I think you've got to be very careful. You know, you can give credit on one thing, but you got to be careful not to just look at all these things in isolation. They're all connected.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit like your next door neighbor says, you're invited to Thanksgiving. And by the way, I did steal your turkey and take all your pumpkins out of your pumpkin patch.
Right. All right. Okay. The other items, let's move on to this. And I mentioned it a moment ago, the Bilderberg Conference, which is taking place this weekend. Is that getting much coverage?
No, not a great deal of coverage. I don't think the Europeans are as conspiracy mad as what I think from reading the American press, Americans are. Bilderberg is the perfect conspiracy story. It's a group of bankers and politicians, a lot of retired politicians, who get together once a year behind closed doors.
Right.
And hence the reason for the conspiracy.
And of course,
unlike the G7, there are no communiques.
Right.
There are no press conferences or anything like that. It's all secret.
Well, the other aspect of it is it's also to promote globalism. And there are the populist movement is contrary to the globalist agenda. Okay, so not much coverage on that. Let's talk about other items there in the European community. Of course, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon on Viewpoints Around the World. Angela Merkel, she's seeing the need for the European Union reform, which, by the way, kind of had its beginning somewhere there in the United Kingdom, as I recall, with Brexit. So what gives with the European Union?
Yeah, I think the Italians have pushed her over into the limelight or shown her the light of the need for reform. A lot of these reform ideas are coming from Emmanuel Macron, the French president.
Mm-hmm.
And the various things that they're talking about are a union of the banks.
Right.
That is a sort of more centralized banking for the European Union and capital markets. Also, a Eurozone investment budget. And that is a budget which people can draw from to invest in high-tech industries or telecoms or something like that. And then there would be a European stability mechanism. A sort of what they call European Monetary Fund, EMF,
mm-hmm.
that would make both long-term loans and short-term loans. But she wants them conditional on structural reforms.
Okay.
Reforms.
Right.
But the idea is that the amount of money that could be available to countries like Italy and Greece and Spain and Portugal, that part would be increased. And Germany is prepared to put more money into it.
Related to Italy, they have come to an arrangement with their government. Is that an indication that at least there is some security in future investment in Italy at this point?
Well, it's difficult to tell. They've just had their vote of confidence today.
Okay.
In their budget, which is basically the opposite of an austerity budget. It's a giveaway budget. It lowers taxes and increases handouts, social welfare handouts. It remains to be seen how the market will respond to that.
Okay, going through bullet points on that, of course, similar situation in Jordan, where the prime minister yesterday resigned because of an austerity budget. Is there challenges in the European community, and Jordan, of course, is not in the European community, but in that region of the world where, frankly, the economies are just not standing up to the demands for those economies, Jordan being one of them?
Well, Jordan has always been a weak economy. It's heavily dependent on foreign aid. You know, it's mainly desert. They're trying to reduce their need for foreign aid, especially since the U.S. is cutting back their foreign aid.
And the other aspect of it, of course, is their basic economies. They can't withstand, quite frankly, a social environment. Let's move on to that in relationship to Emmanuel Macron and the president of France. He has an issue for the railways, apparently.
They've been having a series of rolling strikes on the railways. Basically, he's using the railways and the railway unions as a test case to put through his basic economic reforms. And it looks as if he is winning.
This is an effort on the part of the president of France to, if you will, well, it's an austerity issue. He's trying to strengthen the internal economy of France, is he not?
He is trying to strengthen the internal economy of France. That's absolutely correct. And over the years, the French unions have opposed this with successive administrations, various presidents going right back to Pompidou who tried to do this. And each time they've come up against the brick wall of French trade unionism.
Mm-hmm.
And Macron has said, I'm going to take them on and I'm going to win this time. And we are going to have reforms, like it or leave it or lump it. And it looks as if he is starting to make some progress. A few weeks ago, a few months ago, the French unions, the turnout for the rolling strikes on the railways was like 80% of the workers were turning out and going on strike. It's now down to 17%. And public opinion is swinging his way.
Now, this is all part of the grander events that began with the exit of Britain from the European Union. I mean, things are happening. Positive things, that strikes me as, Tom.
I don't think what's happening in France is necessarily, or the French economy is necessarily connected to Brexit. I think certainly what Angela Merkel is doing, or what Macron's reforms for the EU are certainly related to Brexit. And perhaps it will result in Britain deciding to rejoin the EU. I don't know. There are some things. I mean, one of the reasons Britain withdrew from the EU was because it didn't want to be part of the United States of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
It wanted to be more of a loose part of a loose confederation, right. More of a common market rather than a United States. And what's happening now in the EU is they're responding to the various pressures by becoming more of a United States of Europe, by putting more money and unifying it even more in order to help out the countries like Italy and Spain and Portugal.
This is interesting. And of course, I'm curious, we go all the way back to our earlier conversation about the events of the G7 summit. I wonder if some of this will be a topic. This actually segues into a recent story appearing in the Wall Street Journal about the issue of global climate change and sea level rise. You have an interesting story here. Cambridge University says the green economy could damage the world economy.
Absolutely. What they call the carbon bubble could, by the year 2035, be costing $1 to $4 trillion a year. And the reason is because people are investing so much money now into fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there's a transition period. They're investing more and more money into fossil fuels because it's becoming more expensive to extract the fossil fuels from the ground. And so more and more money is going into that. At the same time, they're shifting things over to the green economy, solar panels, mm-hmm. Windmills, and so forth. And by 2035, it's estimated that you will be getting a lot more from the green economy, but you will put so much money into the extraction of fossil fuels that money will be wasted.
Wow.
And it could cost up to $4 trillion. And the countries that are going to be most affected, or the country that might be most effective, is in fact the U.S.
Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon on Viewpoints Around the World. Just to remind folks, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. We're going to come back and wrap things up with Tom. We've got two items to talk about. The issue of Indonesian succession, and the other, the Emperor of Constantine. His note here gets the finger. We'll find out what he means by that in just a moment here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Again, Tom is joining us from London, England, where he is now soundly asleep because this portion of the program is airing some 5 hours after it was recorded earlier today. He is, of course, nearly midnight there in London as we air this portion of the program. Tom, let's talk about the problems over Indonesian succession before we get to the Emperor of Constantine. What's the issue in Indonesia?
Well, it's a real feminist issue.
Mm.
There is a sultanate on the island of Java, which is the big island in Indonesia, which is called Yogyakarta.
Mm. Okay.
It is the only sultanate where the hereditary monarch still has political power, 400,000 people. And he is now 72 years old, and he wants his daughter to succeed him, his eldest daughter. But the other members of the royal family, that is all his aunts, uncles, and cousins, say, no, we've always had men. No women can be in charge of the royal family. And they're threatening a palace coup, being quite open about it. They're saying they'll let him stay in power, but the moment his daughter comes to the throne, they're going to stage a palace coup and drive her out of the country.
Wow. Is this getting much play
Yeah, it is, actually, because it's a feminist issue.
It is a feminist issue. Yeah, that's...
And it's very interesting. You know, the Indonesians are Islamic. It's the largest Islamic population.
Right.
But they have very strong links back to Javanese mysticism.
Mm-hmm.
This monarchy goes right back to before Islam. And they have a lot of mystical goings on and traditions and things like that related to it. And it involves things like, for instance, the belief that the Sultan is married, linked to metaphorically, the sea goddess. Well, how can a woman be married to a sea goddess?
Right. I understood. It did. That fascinating story. All right. And then let's wrap it up with the Emperor Constantine.
The Emperor Constantine. There's a very famous statue of the Emperor Constantine in the Louvre.
Right.
A bronze statue. One of the most famous statues from antiquity. And for centuries, it has been missing his finger.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'd like to say it is middle finger, but I'm afraid that would be fake news. I have to be honest and say it is his index finger.
Yes.
Okay. Well, recently, a young lady doing her PhD in art history came across a piece of bronze in an Italian museum, and it was classified as a toe. And she looked at it, and she looked at it. She said, that's not a toe. And she measured it, and she discovered it was the missing finger, which had been missing for something like 500 years from the Emperor Constantine's hand.
Now, my question is, has it been reattached?
It's in the process. It will be reattached, and you'd be surprised to know she got her doctorate.
I'm not surprised at all. I'm impressed. Has she been, highly decorated for her finding? I mean, this is significant.
I think she should be.
I've seen.
I think she'd be happy with a doctorate, but you know, I think she should be getting a Légion d'honneur.
absolutely. All right. This is a fascinating story. How long has she been looking at this before she finally decided that it was the finger?
I don't know. I'll be honest. I don't know. She just looked at it and said, that just doesn't look like a toe to me.
No.
and she went and measured it to other toes, maybe her own,
right.
Looked up the details for statues around the world and said, you know, it might just be.
So the Emperor Constantine is getting his full hand back. As always, and expect a little bit of a twist on events around the world with our guest and foreign editor, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World. Tom, a very good evening to you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.